I'm Jack, your host, and this is the Right in the Feels podcast. Whether you're a guy trying to figure out your feels in this crazy, crazy world, or you're a woman trying to solve the puzzle of why men think the way they do, well, this show is for you. Welcome back to the Right in the Feels experience. This here is episode 5. I hope you're having an awesome day. And thank you for taking the time to listen to this voice. If you have been tuning in the last 2 episodes, I brought on guest and my fiance Christine Chen to talk about relationships, and then Michael, her little brother, to talk about what men go through or need to go through in order to get that magical place and popping the question, you know, proposing. So check those episodes out if you haven't. Hopefully their perspectives, insights, and feels, of course, the theme of this podcast, were enlightening to you as they were to me. Now it's back to just me and you guys, I like the intimacy, the closeness we can get. Never forget, this is how we started off, and we are 5 weeks in already. Incredible. So what are we going to talk about today? I got an idea. Let's talk about why a lot of Asian guys have a chip on their shoulder, which really corresponds to Asian male stereotypes. That chip, and not the ones we eat, come from there. The emasculation of Asian men, the whole Asians have small penises myth, basically painting Asian men as passive, less strong, lacking sex appeal and a voice. Key word, less masculine. Masculinity, the importance of man, more like toxic masculinity. Why are Asian men so angry? Shout out to Angry Asian Man blog, by the way, and its creator Phil Yu. Let's talk all about that, because I'm Asian and I'm a guy. So if you didn't know, now you know. I got some feels to impart about this topic. I will break this down into 3 parts. Part 1, the stereotypes that do exist and why. Part 2, how those stereotypes seeped into my consciousness and impacted my psyche and life. And part 3, how I was able to think out of these traps laid out for a lot of Asian men. So if you're a man and you don't need to be Asian, stereotypes exist for all types of men and women, or you're a woman also dealing with stereotypes or trying to figure out why the hell Asian men have that chip on their shoulder and what we can do about it, I hope this episode can answer some of those questions. We're going to need to dig deep on this one. Part 1. So why do Asian men have a chip on their shoulder? If you have Asian guy friends, or you're an Asian guy yourself, as well as if you grew up in an Asian community, you probably have encountered guys that have felt emasculated and felt angry about being on the bottom of the totem pole of dating preferences. Many Asian men feel that dating outside of their race is near impossible, and that's created some mentalities that have been very damaging, like low self-esteem, a lack of sexual identity, a lack of confidence, an attitude that exhibits microaggressions or just aggression, because of the microaggressions that they had to personally experience, which also bled into being very possessive and entitled over quote-unquote their Asian woman counterparts. Nobody owns or is entitled to anybody, by the way, and I'll get into this later. There are real roots to why Asian men feel the way they do, and a lot of times they don't even understand the origins of it. Many times Asians, particularly Asian men, feel they are the butt of jokes, especially from comedians. Most infamously, Steve Harvey in 2017 on his talk show made a joke where he said, "Excuse me, do you like Asian men? No, thank you." Steve Harvey issued an apology shortly after receiving a lot of backlash from that joke, but the origin of these jokes actually goes much, much further back, the roots of its existence. Steve Harvey, being a comedian, was just touching on that spot, with horrible execution, of course, in his actual joke that just wasn't funny. He was laughing hysterically after trying to sell it more. It was cringeworthy to say the least. Trust me, I'm all for a good joke, even if it hits a nerve, or if it's at my expense, because the artistry of a good joke is that they are supposed to touch a sensitive spot, bringing humor to a dark situation or concept even. But it's always about who is making the joke, knowing your audience. It comes down to very much that. White comedians rarely joke about black people because of the history of racism in America, versus typically Asians are an open field to be made fun of. Weird, huh? Not really if we look into it. When America conveniently has coined Asians as the model minority, also steeped in racism. If you look at history itself, there was a time that minorities, including Asian men, were outlawed in marrying white women in the early 1900s. They were barred by anti-miscegenation laws. Talk about going against all men are created equal. Am I right? In the mid-1800s, because Chinese men were seen as a threat to the white workforce, laws were passed that barred the Chinese from male-intensive labor industries, leaving jobs that whites deemed women's work, like childcare, laundry, and cooking. There are many deep-rooted reasons in law and politics for this, and I will further examine this in future episodes centered around racism towards Asians as a whole and not just Asian male stereotypes. That deserves many episodes in itself. History is deep, complicated, and multidimensional with so many variables. But we can't talk about stereotypes without examining the history of the characterization of Asian men in America that date back to the early 20th century, specifically in Hollywood and the big screen. These stereotypes were hardcore, reinforced, and the impact can't be understated. The power of media, which can act as a form of propaganda to sound redundant, is powerful. The three most notable stereotype depictions of Asian men are the characters Fu Manchu, Mr. Yuniyoshi in Breakfast at Tiffany's, and Charlie Chan, all played by white actors, by the way. How ridiculous is that? Yellow face! If you have no idea what I'm talking about, I don't blame you. We're talking about some black and white super oldie stories and movies now. Breakfast at Tiffany's was made in the 60s. Although not black and white, Mr. Yuniyoshi's character was just purely egregiously racist. The almost incomprehensible English in a horrible accent was used to demean Asian immigrants at the time, where English obviously was not their first language, as a comedic joke for the white audience. The character had exaggerated stereotypes of Asian physical features in narrow eyes and buck teeth. Just pretty enraging to watch. I highly recommend just Googling this just to see what I'm talking about if you haven't seen the movie. If you watch a clip, you might be appalled if you're Asian. But basically, the other two well-known fictional East Asian characters in America's cultural history is early in the 20th century, way back as we like to call it, black and white movies. Fu Manchu was essentially a character at the time that depicted Asian man as the threatening, mysterious East Asian, while Charlie Chan was the opposite. He was an apologetic, super submissive Chinese man. One character perpetuated the yellow peril roots by depicting Asians as threatening villains through their race, by attributing their evil characteristics to mystical Asian magic sort of thing. In the movie itself, Fu Manchu actually tells his followers that they must kill the white man and take his woman. On the other hand, Charlie Chan, this character was a Chinese Hawaiian police officer, but played as an emasculated, unassertive, and apologetic in physical appearance and demeanor. He represented at the time a non-threatening East Asian man that could give the audience reassurance. So that sets the stage that starting way back for Asian American men, what they were working against through the media, the two extreme depictions all through yellowface. Oh, let me not forget to mention the white characters, the protagonists, were always the savior and the great white hope. When we fast forward in time, some hope developed in this absolute legend though. Bruce Lee. Forget white hope. He was the great yellow hope. Think about this for a second. Let it marinate. I once watched a recent YouTube clip where an interviewer was going up to random people of all races and they were asked who the most famous Asian American actor was. The names that most commonly popped up in their heads and they expressed were Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan. First, Jackie Chan is not even Asian American. Secondly, Bruce Lee tragically died at the age of 32 in freaking 1973. So his career and life were cut incredibly short. How crazy is that though? It puts into perspective the lack of positive and just overall representation there is for Asian men in Hollywood. Man oh man though, was this man glorious. Outside of what we know about him, which is his martial arts skills, Jeet Kune Do, his on-screen charisma, and the movies that transcended into Hollywood, which in itself is an absolutely incredible feat, especially at that time where Hollywood, as I mentioned earlier, didn't see Asians as a viable product and didn't care for the representation that Bruce Lee was trying to fight for. Bruce Lee was it all. He crossed over cultures, transcended race. He was much more than his kung fu. Outside of his impressive physical attributes, lightning quick reflexes, and dedication in training in martial arts, this man was a deep thinker and he knew beyond training the body, he needed to equally train his mind. Invest in your mind. Invest into your emotions as people and men. Become one with both. Be water. If you haven't noticed by now, I draw so much inspiration in particularly this aspect of Bruce Lee. He broke down barriers through his fiercely independent thinking, Be Water, against staggering odds amongst people of the East and the Western world. He straddled the two sides, the two worlds, each pulling and threatening him to trying to stereotype, box him into what they thought he should be. As I mentioned, he tragically died at the age of 32, just at the beginning of his fame and influence. He was rejected by Hollywood and went to Asia to shoot iconic movies such as Way of the Dragon, Enter the Dragon, and Game of Death. He was depicted in the movie The Way of the Dragon in defeating Chuck Norris, a white man in an epic battle to the death. That's a long way with how Hollywood always made the white man the hero and savior. And of course, I can't forget to mention that Bruce Lee actually married a white woman, Linda Emery. Another barrier broken through. Take that, anti-miscegenation laws. With that said, the progression of Bruce Lee's career and his influence was cut short, and his legend, teachings, and power in popular culture still hold strong. But who knows how, if he lived, he would have influenced the standing and perception of Asian Americans. Rest in peace, this legend. To push up the timeline to the early 2000s, though, I distinctly remember a movie called Romeo Must Die because I'm a huge Jet Li fan. It starred the singer Aaliyah, an African-American musician and actress who sadly died in an airplane accident at the age of only 22. And this movie was a modern version of Romeo and Juliet. Romeo was Jet Li's character and Aaliyah, Juliet. Anybody who has some semblance of Romeo and Juliet, the story, knows that it's a romantic story with two warring families forbidding their love. What is the most classic payoff and climax of any romance, romantic comedy, romantic action movie? It's the kiss. Guess what? Surprise, surprise. There was no kiss between Jet Li and Aaliyah. It wasn't written in. And if it was, it didn't make it into the movie. With all that said, this cult classic movie further perpetuated the idea that the Asian male was not a romantic interest or seen in that light. Yes, he plays a badass character, kicking ass and taking names, being the hero. But when push came to shove in terms of developing an intimacy storyline for Asian men across genders, in this case, African American and Asian, there was no development. Why not? Well, we are starting to understand why, because of the history that was deeply ingrained in the audience's mind, they weren't willing to quote unquote buy it. But nowhere along the way did any writer or executive try to change the bias based on stereotyping rooted in the history of racism against Asians. If we want to move to more notable movies of recent, we can cite the movie Hangover 2, where Ken Jeong plays Mr. Chow, and there's a scene where his penis is mistaken for a shiitake mushroom, making the obvious insinuation that it is small. And of course, we know the character is Asian. Circle back to the stereotypes of Asians having small penises. I think in a vacuum, you can say it's a comedy. But as we established, there are harmful elements of comedy when it's deep-rooted in real social, political, racial propaganda and discourse, which later has an effect on a whole generation, a gender, and a race of people. Another movie worth mentioning is Harold and Kumar, which, no disrespect, because it's a movie I thoroughly enjoy, and John Cho is an amazing ambassador and representation for Asian Americans in film, but is one of the many that characterize the male Asian as a nerdy nice guy, non-threatening, but more modernized in written character. The nice guy, which equals to nice guys finish last, because they aren't assertive characters. So, with all that said, and not getting to more movies or show examples, because there are many, let's get to how this played out in my life. Part 2. Starting from being a teenager, without consciously knowing, I was absorbing and seeing that I had no direct example of an Asian hero or protagonist outside of the normal kung fu or martial arts characters. Beyond that, they had zero intimacy or sexual appeal story arcs. I internalized that feeling inside, and it directly affected my sexual identity and masculinity. I didn't see examples on screen of Asian men dating other races, so it wasn't encouraged through the media. Hence, I took it as my options were limited or non-existent. I also encountered many times, whether that be a white girl or even Asian girl, say, I would never date an Asian guy, without even truly knowing the context of it, which, as I just explained, is deeply rooted and embedded in Western culture, to view Asian men as the least desirable. It built up in me, though, that my value was just less than when comparing myself to other races. In the hierarchy of attractiveness and partner viability through ethnicity, I felt I was at the bottom. For many young Asian men, the developmental stages of masculinity and sexuality can be very volatile and confusing, as if it wasn't enough already. How do we define masculinity? It's strength, independence, leadership, and assertiveness, testosterone, sex drive, machismo, just to be macho. What if, as a boy, you looked around and unknowingly started realizing that most things are working against you in defining your manhood through what we deem as masculine? What if the underlying mechanism working against Asian men was to take away their masculinity because it is the core tactic of white America combating a threat that the Asian man minority, whether that be because of protecting their women at first from marrying minorities or protecting their jobs, and this all transformed into a culture in a way, Asians as the butt of the joke, microaggressions. I've mentioned this before, much how one is forced into a pressurized situation or environment, there are usually two forks. In this case, it goes back to the Fu Manchu character in Charlie Chan. Some men develop that chip on their shoulder, the anger, the need to prove something to the world. I'm worthy to be defined as the optimal man, as everybody else is. I can date a white girl, I'll show you. I need to become overly assertive. Asians have big dicks, so I'm going to bring that big dick energy. On the other fork, the Charlie Chan character, it's the agreeable, the apologetic, the nice guy, emasculated individual. For me personally, I had the mixture of two. I was one confused young man. I wanted to show my toughness. I wanted to prove it. So if I felt my manhood challenged, I would feel the need to defend it. Not just for myself, but because I was an Asian guy and I saw how some people viewed Asian guys. On the other side, I also had low self-esteem, and much of how it manifested was in anger and frustration. And many days I felt less than. When it comes down to it, men want to find partners. And yes, to have sex. They want to be seen as desirable and to attract a partner. Masculinity is a part of that. To be a ladies' man, to have options. When you take away the options, a scarcity mindset starts to develop. You start to hoard your own resources and look out for yourself or your own. So now we bring back why Asian men feel possessive over Asian women. It is because of this reason. They see their options as severely limited, so they begin to feel betrayed when the pool of their own limited options start to expand beyond that. They feel threatened, and this toxic mentality begins to form. Simply put, it's just wrong. No man ever possesses any woman, even despite whatever limited options there are. So I'm going to make this clear. Stop it. Asian women have the right to date whoever they want, whatever race. The truth is, women, Asian women, have a set of just as complicated, if not more complicated, history of stereotyping that ties into sexuality. So having some empathy and compassion for that will be good. The very notion of feeling entitled and threatened and projecting it, trying to restrict another group, is the exact same thing white America has done to Asian men. We can't perpetuate this cycle. This moves us into part three, the finale. So we got all these forces working against Asian men. The emasculation, the struggle in growing into manhood with all these obvious, blatant, also under the surface projections, much rooted in race bias. It's created generations of Asian American men with chips on their shoulder, trying to balance and define not being from the East, Asia like their immigrant parents, but also being distinctly American and relating to the American experience and culture. What do we do? First, I want to offer a positive note that just by pure numbers of Asian American population growth, Asian representation is shifting to being far better. Representation matters in all industries, and to see the success of Asians in industries across the board, including Hollywood, you can see the shift in storytelling. More diverse characters that are multi-layered, and the rise will only continue because the social economic growth is even more staggering, and we should be in awe and grateful for the work, progress, and obstacles that needed to be conquered of past generations, and for the current that are striving to bear that torch. At the end of the day, money talks, business talks. The sway of money and economics determines the idea of how things go mainstream. If people resonate with a product and story, it will be distributed, encouraged, and greenlit. So the more Asians tell their stories and share them, the more widespread and contextualized the idea of being Asian will be expressed and absorbed by everybody. Versus what the narrow view has been created through someone else's bias, closed-minded perspective, thus breaking the very barrier Bruce Lee long ago strived for. Thank you for inspiring me. This podcast wouldn't exist for me if not for his influence. Above all else, though, this is about personal growth and identity. The key to the puzzle is the strife in developing a healthy mindset through this frustration. It will be about digging deeper than you will ever have into emotional and mental problem solving. Working the most important muscle, our minds, and not hitting the weights to show strength. I realize the power is this. Let's define it right now. The truth of the matter for me, I started realizing I was all along with many other Asian men always fighting a losing battle. I tried to be a man as masculine as what the obvious definition is written in our society and culture. But I never seemed to reach it. I got more frustrated. It just became a rat race. The scale kept shifting because it was always a biased game, a rigged setup against me. I was at the whim of the definition of how somebody else perceives me through Asian biases long established before me. Either I wasn't enough or I came off as too extra, just another Asian dude trying too hard. I thought once I proved my masculinity on the sliding scale, I would get everything I desired, which was to be valued, be on a level playing field, finally have my identity as a man measured equally to everybody else. I want to tell you, I don't need to have that masculinity shape my entire self-worth. And beyond that, I have begun to define masculinity as true self-actualization and understanding. To be a strong man, to be quote-unquote sexy and a great option for others, is to develop a deep connection to humanity and nature. So it only elevates the mind outside of these constructs that tie us to superficial things and definitions. I'm done playing that game. I've done and am doing the internal work to see the difference with what others deem who I should be versus who I am. I'm tired of somebody else telling my story. That's why I'm here. Identity. It's incredibly beautiful to take pride in your roots, your appearance, your culture, and make that part of your identity. But when it's being weaponized against you, it's the act of dehumanizing you and having you attach your whole identity to that which the opposing side hopes to create separation, a justification for hate. Identity for me is deeper, and it will always be. Think about this. One day long from now, in your eulogy, people most affectionately will remember you as for being a good human. It doesn't start with this Asian person lived his life. It starts with he or she who is a mother, father, son, daughter, brother, sister, husband, wife, partner, friend, mentor, teacher, creator, thinker, had what kind of impact in life through love and creativity and was able to break through barriers through passion, perseverance, and integrity. It's time to start brushing that chip off our shoulders. Strength is already inherently in you. The world and its forces might feel like it's against you, but your mind can take you to heights far greater than those forces. Be water. I want to end this episode with wise words from Bruce Lee. Many people dedicate their lives to actualizing a concept of what they should be like rather than actualizing themselves. This difference between self-actualization and self-image actualization is very important. Most people live only for their image. Thank you for tuning in for another week of Right in the Fields. I hope this episode finds you well, and share it to anybody who might need it. If you would like to get more fields, the IG for this podcast is at Right in the Fields Podcast. I'll link it all in the description. Talk to you all next week. Cheers.